Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, November is National Novel Writing Month, or as it's known in the writing world, NaNoWriMo. Say it with me, NaNoWriMo. It's a challenge to write 50,000 words in 30 days. It's a tough challenge, but it's one that writers actually face all the time. So in honor of NaNoWriMo, on today's show, we've gathered two people who write for a living. Barbara Chepitis is the author of 11 published novels and two nonfiction books. Her most recent nonfiction book is Saving Eagle Mitch, the true story of rescuing a war-wounded eagle from Afghanistan. Her most recent novel is The Amber, about a young woman who tracks her family history through ancient Lithuania alongside a man who sold his soul to the devil and is trying to get it back. Ah, that old chestnut. She's the founder of the Snickering Witches Storytelling Group and teaches workshops in writing. John Holzer has worked professionally in the video and film biz for over 20 years. He's directed and worked on numerous feature-length, short film, and broadcast projects, and has shot for the Discovery Channel and Good Morning America. He currently owns and operates Digital Film Farm in Averill Park, which provides video support services. Do you have writer's block? Do you even want to write? Well, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet us at @WAMC Vox Pop. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. We're done with the introduction. Barbara, John, happy NaNoWriMo to you both.
I think it's NaNoWriMo.
It says Jess has it NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo.
You're the author.
You pronounce my name so well, and so few people do that. You know, I'm always having to tell them it rhymes with arthritis and bursitis and most inflammatory diseases.
Here's a hint. I practiced a lot.
Oh, there you go.
Because I wanted to say it another way, and I probably will before the end of the show. Anyway, nice to have you both here. I got to say, at the outset, writing, excruciating for me, other than scripts. Scripts, fine. But I remember taking creative writing in college, and the professor was, he's very big into Raymond Carver. Everyday stories.
Beautiful, but depressing.
Oh, good Lord. Depressing stories about cream soda and things like that. Yeah. So it didn't work out all that well for me. It just was not something that was a natural for me. Was it natural for you, Barbara?
I believe so. And, you know, here's the thing. There's actually something we do with our brains when we're doing creative writing that we don't do at any other time. It's like a neurological thing. There's a part of your brain that oversees executive logical functioning and a part that oversees daydreaming. Normally, if you're using one, it turns the other one off. But when you're writing, you have to use both at once. And so it hurts. It actually physically is like makes your brain sort of fry and you go.
So you take a lot of Excedrin is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you have to find a balance. And once you've found it, it's like riding a bike. And you can find how to, you know, okay, now I know how to do this. I can keep getting on this bike and going.
So it gets easier.
Yes.
But forgive me, but how do you come up with a concept of a woman tracking her family history through ancient Lithuania and then, you know, going along with a fella who sold his soul to the devil? I mean, that's just not your everyday occurrence. That's not Raymond Carver.
Well, no. I was swarmed by bees. That's how that happened.
Really?
Yeah, repeatedly.
What do you mean?
I was swarmed by bees repeatedly. And someone told me, well, that's your ancestors because Lithuania has a bee mythology. And they want you to write about them.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. And I wouldn't do it because I had a number of paying projects going at the time. Put it off. And then bees invaded my house, literally got into the walls of my house and crawled up through the walls and came out the outlet in my office where I write. And I said, okay, wow. I'll write the book.
I got the message.
I'll write the book.
Yeah. Wow.
So I really had no choice. It was either that or die.
So when you finished, did the bees go away?
Actually, I stood on my front porch when I always print out that first draft. I'm a hard copy girl still. And I stood on my front porch, and as I was standing there, a swarm of honeybees moved down my road and kept going.
Spectacular.
I'm not making this up either.
So are you attuned to the somewhat mystical?
Apparently, I just wish they'd throw money.
So your feet are on the ground.
Yeah.
So John Holzer, you've done screenplays and you've done directing. Are novelists just a real pain in the backside to deal with?
They scare me.
Do they? I bet.
Especially when she's talking about both sides of the brain working.
Yeah.
You know, I realize that's how she gets to the doctor. There's the doctor.
Oh, that's right.
You know?
Dr. Chepitis.
And doctors scare me too. And you know, one more thing about the bees. Mm-hmm. My wife's a beekeeper, so you need to do some research, you know, come on over.
I think I need to do like rituals and, you know.
There you go. We can do that too. Yeah.
Well, this is going to be an interesting hour.
We're going all over the place.
Let's go to the phones and go to Bill in Niskayuna. Bill, you're on.
Yes, I'm a master sommelier, which means I'm a certified wine expert, and I'm attempting to write a project on a famous person in the wine industry. And I'm looking for a collaborative writer in France to work with. Do you have any advice on how to find someone to collaborate with in France?
Huh. You know, I think I'd start on Facebook and look up some pages that are sommelier pages from France. That might be one way to start.
Well, I'm not looking for someone who knows wine necessarily. I'm looking for someone who's boots on the ground in France and who is interested in writing, who's a writer. Also.
Oh, okay. Okay, so just...
More so than, you know, I'll supply the wine part. Besides, you know, if I find someone who already is in the wine field, might be a little bit of a conflict. I'm looking to, you know, bring someone into the project, which is really essentially my project.
And this is going to be for print, not script, correct?
Right. Well,
of course.
We'll see, right?
Yeah.
To start out with, of course, a book. Okay. Actually, I would like to do a series of articles leading up to two separate books, which are similar, one for release in France, one for release to English-speaking.
There are a number of writing group pages on Facebook. I would start with them, and I would do a Google search on international writing leagues and guilds and clubs.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot for that call. We're joined today by Dr. Barbara Chapitis and John Holzer. You have a PhD, John?
No, I don't.
No?
Not
we'll just call you Mr.
There
no
you
FUD.
Go.
Right.
Fair enough. So you have done lots in the TV business and in movies as well. As far as transferring, and I'll talk to you both about this, because I think you have, Barbara, you've also done some screenplay work as well,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right. Yep.
So how does one take a work that is not yours and transfer it, keeping the artistic sort of vision of the author and yet make it accessible for the screen?
Well, from the director's point of view, there's a time when, even if you're the writer-director, that you put that director's hat on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now, you're not necessarily working with the words anymore. It's a camera that is now your major tool. And we have to start to look at what is now not only the text of what's happening, but what's the subtext. Mm-hmm. And often, even when we are the writers ourselves, we find that there's all kinds of hidden meaning and other really juicy matter that's a part of that. And so as a director, it's my job now to bring that out and put it on camera and to build, you know, these worlds that exist that we know about when we see it, but it's not written. And, you know, so it's an uncovering process.
Yeah. And as a writer working with a director or producer, you have to... I've done this. You kind of pick your battles. There's one or two phrases or lines in a script that I insist must be in there. Other than that, I'm going to kind of defer to the visual storytelling expertise, because that's what producers and directors have. They're visual storytellers, and they can add to what I've done so much.
But you've optioned novels before. I mean, there as John mentions, there is quite a bit beyond dialogue. That is certainly, and part of it may still reside only in the author's head. Do you find times where you say, gosh, this just does not look right to me?
I've had that experience when I'm working with someone else where it's just not going, it's not clicking in some way. And then you really have to sit down and dig in and, you know, get a bottle of wine and get through it until you understand each other and you can find the place you're both trying to reach.
I suppose
the bottle of wine helps a great deal.
And I suppose also the amount of the option, the dollar amount probably helps
to some extent. Yeah.
We're joined today by Barbara Chapitis and John Holzer. We talk creative writing. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Rather than take a short call before the break, Zach, let's take a break about a minute early here, and we'll be back to the phones on Vox Pop in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements. Noble-home.net. Pave Tile, Wood and Stone. Using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone, showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, presenting Radical Inventions, an exhibit of works by five gallery artists through December 27th, open 7 days, carriehaddadgallery.com. And Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm. Convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Creative Writing Forum today with Dr. Barbara Chepitis and John Holzer. And you at home, 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. And Matthew in Athens. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. When my son was about a year old, I was a stay-at-home dad. I had just transitioned from a very involved job. So when he was about a year old, I got the inspiration to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down at my computer, and it just flowed. It was like that kind of dream state.
Mm-hmm. I do.
The characters spoke. Yeah, the characters spoke to me. I basically transcribed what they were saying.
Yep.
For the narrative, I watched them visually in my mind and explained what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
In a matter of several months, even though I was a full-time stay-at-home dad, I knocked out about a 300-page novel.
Great.
I then sent it off to a bunch of literary agents. I got about 25 rejections. Nobody was interested. I put the novel away. My son turned 18 this past summer, so it's been sitting there for 17 years, and I've just not had the emotional strength to go back and work at it again and send it out. Now, I've been told you don't send it to friends to read. But I did that anyway, and everybody I sent to, it's a mystery novel, everybody I sent it to gave it, you know, all my friends, they loved it, couldn't figure out who
whodunit,
yeah. Have you gotten any professional opinions on it? Have you worked with someone who's a professional editor or writer and asked them to?
No, my life became a little more involved after that, you
okay.
know, as I...
Because
I
recommend that if you're getting... I mean, 25 rejections, to be quite honest, is not that many.
Right.
A Wrinkle in Time was rejected, I think, a couple of hundred times or something outrageous like that.
Yeah.
If you work with... Yeah, if you find someone who's a professional who will read the script for you and give you the novel and give you an analysis
right.
of how they see it and what's going on, that can help you pinpoint, do you need to make changes, do you not? Do you need to maybe sell it in a different way or to a different crowd than you're trying to, rather than just letting it wither away in your desk drawer? Because novels get very unhappy when they wither away in a desk drawer and they start screaming at night. I'm warning you about this. It can
be
scary.
I've already come up with a sequel. My infant son was the main character. It's a mystery novel. I think part of the problem was while I was waiting and receiving all these rejections, I thought I would never come up with another idea again.
Yeah, people think that, and they're generally wrong. Once you have one idea, that means your brain is pretty good at making ideas and it wants to make another. But you do that with scripts too, right? There's a script analysis
absolutely.
Thing
and I think
as well.
That's really good advice about getting it out there into the, quote, professional market, you know, to really give your work a fighting chance.
Yeah.
You know, and to get out of the closet and to really up our game, I think it's really important to put it out there with people who we can not only say, what do you think of it, but where do you see the strengths? Where do you see the weaknesses?
It's got to be tough, though, With these houses that see so many,
oh yeah,
how do you get yours noticed?
The big houses with an agent.
Yeah,
that's the agent's job, is
have
to get it noticed.
Agent.
Yeah, with the small presses, that's a matter of persistence, really. But there are people who do writing consultancy for hire.
Yeah,
and it's well worth it to have that.
I assume you should vet your. The person you hire,
yeah.
It would seem to be rife. A certain element may be scammers out there doing that.
Yes, and
tons.
And
yeah.
Yeah, tons. And you can ask them for references, other people they've worked with that yeah. you can speak to. And I've done that in the past. I think I got someone from Upstate Independence that way, who I worked with for years on a project.
We're joined today by Dr. Barbara Chipaitis, and I'll just say doctor because I wrote it, but I'm going to cross that out because you just like Barbara, right?
I'm good.
Okay, and then John Holzer, who's not a doctor, is also here, and we talk creative writing. Now, that last call, a couple of points I'd like to follow up on.
Okay.
And you mentioned 25 rejections is not a lot.
It's not.
So in the creative writing process, is dealing with rejection something you learn? Is it, in other words, the first time must be just withering. You think you've written the greatest thing in the world. Are you better at it now after having written so many books?
No.
No?
Rejection is awful. It never feels good. Some have more sort of weight on them than others, depending on, you know, how much money was involved, partly, and what your hopes were. I don't think that any writer ever feels comfortable with rejection. You learn to not let it break your stride. So I think that's what you learn. I always tell people, you know, writing is a beautiful, blissful, warm, and incredible space. And
for you.
For, yeah.
I mean, there have been many a tortured soul who has been a writer.
That's true. But when you get into the publishing end of it, put your crash helmet on,
yeah.
you know, because that's not as pleasant of a world.
And I think a lot of it also has to do with expectations,
yeah.
you know, and I think that's one of the great things about, you know, Writer's Month, Nemo, yeah. Rhymo,
Nemo, Rhymo, whatever it is.
You know, there has been times, and I don't write novels, but I write short screenplays. I write all kinds of things creatively. And the more that I find that I'm attached to the outcome, and a lot of my writing happens to be for clients. It's creative yeah. writing for clients.
Right.
The more that I have such a downfall. I'm depressed when it isn't necessarily received well.
Mm-hmm.
But because I have to write so much stuff and it's often rejected, first drafts are often rejected, I've gotten more comfortable with rejection and knowing that it's okay, it's back
yeah.
to the drawing board.
Yeah. I find that, you know, I wrote commercials for a long time and same thing. I mean, you come up with, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Client hates it. it's not brilliant.
And, you know, often I find at least some of the time the client or the producer has helped me make my work better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't get too attached, it can be better.
I love a good editor or, you know, working with a good producer, a good director. They can change the world in the most wonderful ways.
We will get back to the phones in just a moment at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Elizabeth and Hunter, hang on. I just want to follow up with one more part of that last caller's question.
Okay.
And he had mentioned, and I've talked to many musicians, and they often describe the same thing. The caller described writing this, it seemed like it came from another place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're in the creative process, both of you, do you sometimes think, well, I'm just the conduit here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all the time.
So what is it?
magic?
I think for me, often it's because, you know, I've been so steeped in the process that it's, first of all, it's important to me. And then secondly, I've been living with it for a while. So it is flowing out of me, but it's something that has been, you know, stirring for quite some
yeah.
time. And it's now finally got an outlet. I write every morning, and I find that because of that practice, that the floodgates are kind of already opened a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can get out of the way, I guess we're back right. to that thing, the flow, then it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I there's all kinds of psychological explanations for it, and also neurological explanations have to do with the way that we store images and emotions and so on, and we don't keep it all up front. We keep it in the back, and if you are able to get to a moment where you open that door between the front and the back of your mind, then whoosh, out they come to play.
So you think know? Then it is an amalgam of all your experiences and everything you've perceived, and not something that is in a discrete other place that you tap into.
I can get mystical about it.
Go absolutely. For it. This is Vox Pop. I got all day. Go ahead.
I think it has to be, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. There are times, and I think it's, you know, there are some, like, it's like when you dream. There are some dreams you have, it's just your brain sorting through junk. And some dreams you have that are about a lesson you need to learn. And I believe there are some dreams that come to you from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, the when dead people appear in my dreams, it's like, oh, yeah, you're visiting, you know. And I do think that there are some stories that need to be told. And if I look at it mystically, they choose you to tell them. They ask you to tell
I
them.
I like
it.
That. All right, good answer. You're going to get a gold star
Thank
for that
you.
One. Let's go back to the phones. Elizabeth, thanks for being so patient. Elizabeth and Hunter, you're on.
I have a couple of, well, three projects, actually, that I'm working on. And I'd like to know, two of them are performance projects. I think I'm going to make them just screenplays. They're already in play form, and I've been workshopping them with actors. I'd like to register them either with Writers Guild of America or copyright them, but what if I make changes? Now, I will not change them so radically that it's a different project altogether, but is my registration with either of those venues null and void if I do change something?
My understanding is that you retain, as long as you're retaining the same, it's the concept, you know,
uh-huh.
and title, then you retain copyright. That's my understanding. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV. So.
Okay. And is that true for novels, too?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's Elizabeth, I want to just clue you in that every month or two we'll do a copyright forum in this time slot in Vox Pop. That's a perfect mm-hmm. question to give a call and ask the copyright attorneys and whatnot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. We're talking creative writing and the whole process today with Barbara Chepitis and John Holzer. And let's go to Wanda in Gilderland. Wanda.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm glad you guys mentioned NaNoWriMo because I just finished the 50,000 words yesterday and I'm moving on.
Wow.
To continue, that 50,000 words is probably just under half of what I need to finish what I'm doing. This is the first time I've tried to write a novel. I've been a professional public relations writer for almost 40 years. But
how did you like the process?
Oh, I thought it was fine. The only thing that was a little bit strange is I went to a couple of the group writing sessions, and it's basically just people with their computers writing, and I can do that at home. the question that I have is, I'm basing this novel on a true incident, it's just the basis. Everything has been fictionalized, and somebody told me that there's a thing called fair use. Do you know anything about that?
Again, this is a copyright forum question.
Yeah, that would be more of a legal question. I have written novels based on events that actually happened. And this is my understanding, and I did check this out with a lawyer for one novel. Names were all changed. Places were changed, he said I was in fine standing. Okay. Didn't have a thing to worry about.
Well, most of the people that I'm talking about are dead, but one of the people actually is still living and is in prison. So I think that I have made up other characters that didn't exist,
yeah.
as far as I know, and their life stories are totally different.
Well, that's why you put that little disclaimer at the beginning that this is a piece of fiction and
any resemblance to
blah, 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 blah.
It's purely coincidental, but what if it's not purely coincidental?
Well, I've done that. I did that tongue-in-cheek, too, once in the beginning of a novel because it was actually set in, you know, SUNY has these tunnels underneath.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, oh, it's just imaginary. If you're imagining this is a real college. And I was doing it very tongue-in-cheek, but nobody came after me.
Okay, because you know you're on the radio now.
I know that.
All right.
I know that.
Wanda, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. This one comes in via email from Mark, who says, could you please explain what steps a regular person has to take to get recognized or connected to real publishers in the world of writing?
Oh,
isn't it true that there are dishonest organizations that would try to profit by asking aspiring writers to pay for publishing?
Yes. Best source to dig them out is a site called Predators and Editors.
Ah.
And they give you a list of publishers and agents who are scamming.
Hmm.
And they keep track of that. So that's a really great place to check. As far as getting in with publishers, I suggest sacrifices of blood. I'm kidding.
You really are my kind of person. I got to tell you, you got bees attacking you.
It's preferably someone else's. You want to go to conventions. You want to see what kind of book or you're working on, and you want to go to conferences and conventions, which is where publishers hang out. You can stop at their table and chat with them and see what they're looking for these days.
You know, this NaNoWriMo thing. So the challenge was to write 50,000 words in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that necessarily putting a quantity of words on something counterproductive to the creative process?
I don't think it's counterproductive. I think it's, you know, again, going back to just opening the floodgates and keeping things moving, it's there's something to be said for just surrendering to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, opening
Nicely
up.
Nicely put, John.
Yeah, you know,
it really is
important, because often, you know, when I am transitioning into the writing more and more every day over the last few months, and I used to sit down and I used to write with one specific goal, and that goal was often connected to being great. Well, how often is that going to happen?
Yeah.
And the process of sitting down every day to write in order to just explore, mm-hmm, has opened things up and has made it so that I can learn something from my own writing. And so when I sit down, and I didn't expect this to happen, but when I sit down to actually write something with a goal in mind, I'm finding that I'm warmed up.
So a number of word goal? Because, I mean, I can write a million words and I'll still be a lousy novelist.
Well, 50,000 words is kind of the size of a novel that a publisher will buy. So that's why they put that on it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, some people make it to that. Some people find their novel is going to be much larger. Some find it's going to be a little shorter, a little shy. You're trying to get your first draft out.
So this is basically just practice. It's like doing your scales.
Yeah.
But don't you think also possibly in that 50,000 words that there's the heart of something,
mm-hmm,
there?
Or, yep.
You know, even though maybe just a percentage, 10% is the tickle of something that is really real.
Yep.
It's by diving into it that we find it.
It's by setting that kind of goal, and it's, you know, a marathon runner has to surrender to the marathon. If you're going to write a novel, you have to learn how to do that particular marathon and surrender to it as well. Just like you said, I love that phrase. I think the 50,000 word thing is great. Did you know there's also a similar thing that you do over the long Labor Day weekend? You write a novel over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
what percentage of the population actually should write a novel? I mean, I can't imagine everybody would turn out a pretty good novel.
I happen to think that everyone should write,
mm-hmm,
not necessarily for publication, for self-discovery, for your kids. My mother wrote these incredible letters, and we have them now. She died 5 years ago, and we put all her letters together. And that's something that, you know, we can pass on to our children and their children. So this is where you came from. If you write your memoir just for your kids or your grandkids, you know, I think that's a really valuable thing to do. And there are so many worse ways you could waste your time.
I think
you got a point.
If you look at it from strictly a creative point of view, it's, you know, we learn more about ourselves, you know, in that process. And anything that we need to do creatively, whether it's take photographs, whether it's make films, all of that means being able to convey a story.
Mm-hmm.
And writing is the heart of, you know, I can't, well, I guess I could tell a story verbally. You're an expert at the verbal storytelling too. But I mean, I have to start with the writing in order to kind of flesh it out.
Mm-hmm.
Our number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis and John Holzer here. We talk creative writing. Tell you what, Zach, let's take a break and we'll get back to the phones. It's Vox Pop on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported cheddars, specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, local baked goods, honey and maple products in every corner of our store, waterwheelvillage.com. Speed Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. And the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis and John Holzer. Say it with me, Holzer, not Holzer, as I've been saying for 40 minutes. Holzer, okay? Ray, do your homework, you jerk. This one came in via, I believe, email from Anonymous in Albany. Are there software or apps that help make screenplay writing easier? How has tech helped the writing process, screenplay or novel? Good question, Anonymous.
Yeah, absolutely. There's Final Draft. I mean, that's probably the most popular one. You know, it certainly helps with formatting. There's Dramatica, which, you know, some people hate, but it has to do with helping you structure. And there's Scrivener. Now, I have not used Scrivener. Have you heard of that at all?
I've heard of it. I don't use any of them. I'm old school, kind of.
You don't even have a phone, a wireless phone.
I don't even have a cell phone.
God bless
oh
you,
gosh.
Barbara Chepitis.
So yeah, there are definitely, you know, tools out there. I think the thing is to be careful that they don't become crutches.
Yeah.
You know, if they're facilitating you, if that's what you know, I feel good with it. I use also Evernote. You know, I think part of writing is also just collecting those thoughts mm-hmm. as they come along and Evernote. So yeah, I'm a techie and those are some of the things you can use.
But form, adhering too much to form can deaden the creative process, can it not?
Well, with a script, you really... There's a form, and boy, you better learn it, and you better follow it, especially when you're starting.
8 movements?
Yeah.
3 acts? And then you've got Wes Anderson, 5 acts, you know, so...
What about Fellini?
Well, no acts.
Yeah.
See, once your name is Fellini, you can get away with that stuff. But.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and Melinda in Niskayuna. Melinda.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I've enjoyed the discussion. I also appreciate writers who appreciate producers and their part in the process. I have a question about not the creative process of writing, but the importance of the art of refining, rewriting, and doing that. So I'm just going to get off and listen to you guys. Oh,
hey, Melinda, thanks for the call. All right.
Do you know what Hemingway said about that? He said, write drunk, edit sober.
Brilliant. I broadcast, oddly enough.
I believe in that in the sense that I believe you should write fast and furious and, you know, give yourself to it totally and then edit very slowly and soberly and with a different eye, you know, a different part of your brain, really.
And then there's also the saying, there is no writing, there is only rewriting.
Yes.
And you know, I think... That's been my life lately, I'm launching a number of different products that really are about writing first, and I'm finding that it's all rewriting, you know, for me. And video editing is very similar to that too. You know, often I used to say I was two-thirds the way through a project before I really realized what that project was. Now the difference is some of us. And sometimes I'm willing to go back and actually go for making it really good. So I'll go back to the beginning after being two-thirds of the way in. But when I'm not, the project usually suffers. So it's rewriting, re-editing.
Yeah. It's incredibly important. I know I like to, you know, bang out my first draft in like 2 weeks. But then editing, I adore the process of going through and you're smoothing it. It's like the icing on the cake. You just keep refining it.
When's it too much for you, Barbara?
I don't think I've reached that point.
Really?
I really have not. No, I know when it feels complete and then I'm ready to put it away.
Can you let it go then? Or once it's published, can you say, okay, listen, there is something I'd love to change, but I'm going to let this go and let me be content with it?
I have a lot of ego, and I'm generally...
You're like, this is the best thing ever?
I tend to reread my stuff and go, wow, that was really great. Look what I did.
Good for you. All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Saratoga. Mike.
Hey, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I guess I'm suffering from a major writer's block. I had like a minor success in screenwriting about almost come up on 2 years ago and haven't been able to do much since then. And it's not my full-time job, so I have another job plus family and stuff. So I don't know if you have any advice to get someone working again, writing again.
You know what? I don't believe in writer's block. I absolutely do not. I don't believe it exists. I believe that what we have are fears.
Yeah,
I agree.
You know, and I don't think there's, and I think that it's a matter of learning to, like my character Jaguar says, see who you are, be what you see. Figure out what the fear is that's keeping you from moving forward with it. Trick yourself in any way you can to get back into writing. I often recommend that people use music. Put on some music and just free write to it for a while.
See
what happens. Yeah. And give yourself short periods of time, 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
And has that ever happened to you?
No. No.
Okay.
It hasn't. And that's kind of how I know. I've watched a lot of students go through this. And my son went through it. He's a writer. And he did some sort of retraining the words in his head. We all have a critical person, an editor, an inner editor that sits on our shoulder and scolds us and tells us we're no good at this. And you want to make sure that editor's out of the way while you're doing your free write.
All right, Mike. Okay. Hey, good luck
Thank
with
you.
That. Now, Barbara, did you ever think maybe you're just one of the lucky ones?
I guess.
I mean, you've seen your you've seen your students have writer's block. It's not uncommon.
Yeah. I
think it's the difference between turning pro.
Maybe. That could be it. I mean, because I've always got three or four projects going at once in different phases. Right, John?
Stephen Pressfield talks exactly about that in the book The War of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got another book called Turning Pro. And what he talks about is what Barbara's saying, is that there is no option. You have to sit down and write. And so when you decide that you are turning pro, and pro doesn't mean that you're making money from it necessarily, pro means that this is what you're going to do, you're not sitting down again to write something great,
right,
to make something great, looking at it from an art form, you're sitting down to do the process. And there is a huge difference in those two things.
Trust the process, Luke. You really do. You have to start the actual writing and see what emerges and trust that something will. And I guess I've always trusted that because something always has. And if I'm editing this over here and working on starting this there, if this is not working today, I can go to that.
So this is interesting. So then I can surmise that inspiration is not a prerequisite of great art.
I don't think so. I think what's a prerequisite is your willingness to surrender to it.
Inspiration can be a killer.
Ah.
Because if we wait to be inspired,
then
we've already killed the idea. Because inspiration, if we're going to turn pro, inspiration has to be in the process itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we ignore inspiration. It means we can't wait for inspiration.
Yeah, and if you begin it, events will occur.
All right, Holzer, I'm going to give you an honorary doctorate for this. That was very good. All right, now we have two doctors on the program. Let's go to Adam and Beacon. Adam, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I think I have a clarification for the idea of fair use.
Okay. Yay.
Fair use refers to using, quoting other people's material in your own work, and so scholars are worried about it, how much Joyce they can quote at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about using other people's work in your work. So I don't think that fictionalizing something else would constitute as a broach of fair use.
All right. Hey,
Thank
Adam.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Thanks a lot. Let's go over to Derek in Albany. Derek.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. My call is for John Holzer. I have actually worked with John multiple times on some jobs in the video industry, so to speak. And he is really a wealth of knowledge as far as the industry goes, and I'm so glad that he's here.
Are you looking for a job now, Derek?
Actually not. I'm working with a friend of John's, and I'm actually in a very amazing position right now.
Okay, so let's dispense with the platitudes and get to the question.
Yes, exactly. It's actually ironic because my question was about being concise. So John is very, very good at being concise, and in working with him, he has imparted knowledge on me in just one sentence that has really changed my entire thought of myself and my place in this business.
Okay.
So I'm wondering what people can do, especially I heard people call in earlier, and they seem to have some trouble being concise with their ideas. So I'm wondering, how do you be concise, for one, and then two, how can you kind of manage that to the point where you're not doing it to a fault, where you're being too concise? How have you gotten to do that? Is it just a lot of practice?
Think before you speak.
Yeah, that helps.
I don't, it sounds too concise, it certainly is, but I think it takes practice. It takes trying to formulate the question and the answer before we open our mouth and know when the period should go in.
But I mean, isn't this also a function of finding yourself and your own voice?
Absolutely.
Some people maybe go on a little bit longer than others.
Yes. And here I'm a novelist, so concise really isn't in my dictionary. And I have to go back. For me, it's part of the editing process when I want to be concise and right on spot, on target. I have to edit my way to that. It doesn't just happen.
I think it also, it happens in an awareness sense. If we get so lost in the forest, then we're never stepping back and being able to see where we are. And sometimes where we are is the place where we need to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think also that some people naturally write briefer. The voice that you're saying, right? And some people naturally overwrite and then have to, their edit process is trimming. Other people underwrite and their edit process is expanding.
I think it's easier to write very poorly when you overwrite.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a lot of bad writing out there, and a lot of it is the long overuse of language. Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that's what I was talking about before in the overwriting process, and two-thirds of the way through, you finally figure out what you want to say, and it's not going back and revisiting or turning it over to other pros so that first, you figure out where the heart and the structure of the story is, and secondly, have the energy and the will to go back and make those changes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. We're joined by Barbara Chapitis and John Holzer. Holzer, say it. Jennifer in Pequog. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi. Regarding predatory publishers, my father's writing a book. He's 90, a widower, and I just found out he has taken out high-interest loans and maxed his credit cards to pay for all of this. Anything I can do about this?
Oh, my. To pay for what?
To pay for, he signed up online to write a book, and that was all his publicity.
That might be a legal question. We can't.
Oh, yeah. You really want to talk to a lawyer about that. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I'm so sorry, because it's a wonderful thing for him to be doing, writing a book. And he shouldn't have to pay that much for that.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Jennifer.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate
it.
So talk to her. No,
yes.
Thanks a lot. Over to David in Sullivan County. David, you're on.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
My question has to do with copywriting. I wanted to ask about aspiring writers. Do you feel that aspiring writers should be concerned about having their ideas stolen? Aspiring writers not knowing anything about the world of publishing, it's so much fun to come up with an idea, but do you recommend that aspiring writers should copyright their work before trying to send it out, or what do you recommend that in that regard? Is there a problem with work being stolen?
I've never had one. Maybe my ideas are too weird to steal. It's possible. I have to tell you, it's very, very, I've not heard of it happening,
And I wonder, when you say aspiring writer, where are you in that process? Are you writing a lot, or have you yet to start writing, or just a little?
Well, I am. I'm writing, but I'm nowhere near the point of sending my work off to publishing houses.
Publishing houses are not going to steal your work.
Okay.
Okay? They're just not going to do that. It's too much trouble for them to do that. When I write a script, before I send it out, I generally register it with the WGA, the Writers Guild of America,
okay.
Just because a lot of people won't look at it unless it's registered, because it covers them.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
point.
So that's a kind of a different world. But I never bothered copywriting anything before I sent it out.
David, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 in the closing moments of this program. Time for a few more calls. David in New Paltz. David.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on a process that works for me. I took a workshop and on creative writing, and they recommended that the first thing in the morning when you open up your eyes, the first thing you should do is start writing for the first 2 hours, because they say the first 2 hours, you're still in a dream state.
Does that work for you, Barbara?
Oh, no. Not at all. But I think that's something important is that, you know, when I'm teaching process with students, we try a bunch of different ones, and I advise them stick with the one that works for you, because different people have a different process.
Well, I found this works very well.
And that's what you should do. Absolutely.
Morning Papers is Julia Kant. Are you familiar with that book? Anyway, The Artist's Way, it's called.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's about morning
papers.
I'm
a night writer. Yeah. I think it's the same thing. It's the idea that you want to be in a slightly altered state of consciousness.
Are the writers all still drinking absinthe?
Not this one. Not this one.
I think we got a theme going on here. You know, I think it comes down to so that we're not getting in our own way. The editor isn't sitting on the shoulder. You're
absolutely
talking about drinking. You know, the editor's gone.
Well, that's, I think,
too early
why
in the morning, too late at night.
Yeah.
You got something there.
I think that's why a lot of writers end up there.
All right, let's go quickly to Nancy in Del Mar. Hi, Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I have an interest in memoirs. I attended some writing of a workshop that really wasn't very helpful. But the real reason I'm calling is that I just recently read Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic. Are you familiar with that book?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Oh, it totally speaks about everything that has been discussed here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, fighting from every perspective, but the creative process in general. And how she struggled through it as well, and what she did with some of these things. And by no means is it a script, but it was captivating in that who knew? And after she wrote her Eat, Pray, Love piece, what happened after that and how difficult it was to write the next piece, because everybody was confronting her with, how are you going to do it?
Right.
How are you going to follow that?
Right.
And how that in itself stood in the way of some of the creative process. Anyway, it's a great book to address many of the things that I've been listening to this afternoon.
Hey, Nancy, thanks a lot for the call.
Yep, bye.
Bye now. Well, we're about out of time, but this was fun.
Yeah.
I got to say, this was fun. I might have you both back when it's not NaNoWriMo. What do you think? Would you come back?
Absolutely.
That's
love to.
Good. And any projects? We have about 15 seconds. Any projects you want to mention?
Go on Amazon and look up The Amber. It's a lot of fun.
I'm launching a director's course, online course, DIY Film School, digitalfilmfarm.com.
Yeah.
It'll be a mini course that'll be offered for free.
What software do you use, Avid?
I use Final Cut Pro.
Nice. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right. I like Vegas. I think Vegas is fun.
Vegas, yeah.
All right, so that's it.
Also, Literary Lunch is my blog, a literary lunch at blogspot.com. For that, you get writing stuff and recipes.
Well, this, recipes too.
You
bet. All right. Oh, this is good. All right, thank you both, Barbara Chapitis and John Holzer. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the Capital Region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Thistle Hill Weavers, Baxter Road, Cherry Valley, hosting an annual open house December 5th and 6th from 9 to 5 with mill tours of historic looms featuring drapery from Abraham Lincoln's home in Springfield, Illinois. ThistleHillWeavers.com. The Habitat for Humanity Restore, 70 Fuller Road, Albany, offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted. HabitatCD.org/restore. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. I'm tired. That's the end of the show. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.